Okay, good morning. My name is Robin Burgin. I'm a freelance consultant in Web Standards, and I'm currently chairing the Device APIs group in W3C and the Core Mobile group as well. So what I'm going to do here is give a very quick overview of the relationship between Tizen and the HTML5 stack in general, plus a small taste of the future. Also, I'm going to speak of places where standards could really use some feedback from the community. So it would be good if you could think of some of the problems that we're having, and if you have any feedback, it would be wonderful. And after that, we'll transition to Wansok, who'll discuss in more detail what's available in Tizen today. So, just to go quickly over the plan of the presentation, first I'll look at how important Tizen standards are for Tizen itself, what it means to use standards in this context. Then I'll go quickly over what HTML5 means, what's coming up, where the platform is today, what's available. Then we'll look at what's coming next in standards. Currently, activity in web standards has been growing and growing and growing. We're working on a lot of different things, and things are shipping almost every other week. So obviously, there's no way I can get into detail about everything that's going on. There's dozens of groups, but I'll try to at least cover some of those of the interesting ones. And then I'll look quickly at issues of privacy and security that are currently at the heart of what's going on in standards, so that we can figure out a way of designing a web platform that works across the board, from operating systems all the way to browsers, using the same technologies, while keeping it safe for end users. So, first, let's start by looking at Tizen and its relationship to standards. So, in web technology, we have a number of different players. We have web browsers that you're familiar with, things like Firefox and Opera and all that. And we're starting to see web operating systems like Tizen, but also Boot2Gecko, and in a different manner, Chrome OS, and other things like that. Windows 8 is also using a lot of web technology. Whether it's a web operating system is still up for debate, but it really is using a lot of web stuff. So it's getting very close. Then you also have web runtimes, things like WAC, for instance, that don't try to expose as much. They don't necessarily want to have every single application designed to be a web-based application, but they do offer a lot of access to the platform and a lot of powerful APIs. And then you also have something that's frequently forgotten, which is browser extension platforms, things like Mozilla add-ons, the Chrome extensions, apps. All of these things are being merged. Opera extensions just got merged with their widget effort. So the browser extensions are really, really linked to something similar. And in fact, if you look at something like Chrome OS, it's essentially a browser extension system used as on top of traditional web applications. So if you kind of observant, if you've had enough coffee, you might notice that there's something fairly similar between these four bullet points. There might be a word that's, sort of repeating itself a little bit, that's. I think it's really important. It's difficult, but it's rather crucial that we manage to get some form of interoperability across the board for these four different systems. Obviously, there will always be things that you can't do safely in a web browser, at least unless there's a big step forward in security. You probably don't want it to be possible for an arbitrary website to upgrade itself to the point where it can read off anything from your hard drive or delete all your contacts or make a phone call to an overpriced number on your behalf without you asking. And these are things that obviously in a web OS you want to be possible. So there are distinctions, but still you want to be able to use as much as possible the same technology across the board for everything. And you also want to make sure that when there are several players inside any of these boxes, you get them to interoperate. There's a lot of momentum behind web operating systems now, which is wonderful, but it would be really stupid if 2 years down the line we have, you know, great Tizen, great BootGecko, great whatever else, and you couldn't write an application that would run on two of those or three of those without going through terrible migraines. So we really need to figure out how to interoperate and provide standards in this area, if only because from the point of view of the platform, if you interoperate, you get a lot more content. And it's really important that developers are able to write their content once and have it work everywhere. And it's really important that we're able to come up with to boost a web application ecosystem to the point where everything works everywhere, because that means that operating systems can then compete on quality of implementation and usability and all sorts of other aspects, but at least you get the basics and you get the ability to run an application everywhere. This idea of write once, run everywhere might be familiar. You might have heard it somewhere before. You might not trust me when I talk about it. You may have been burned. It's actually becoming real. The experience gained in making the web work across browsers over the past 20 years, which has at times been painful and difficult, is paying off in that now that we're moving towards a more powerful web platform, it really helps to have those 20 years beforehand of trying everything possible to make things work everywhere. Also, one thing that really helps with web technology compared with other things, such as Android, for instance, is that web technology was designed for fragmentation from day one. There was never going to be one single device, one single screen type, one single input method, et cetera, one single operating system. It was always going to be running on a mess of all sorts of different platforms. And while that may seem painful at first, it actually does provide a lot of value, because over those 20 years, the technologies have evolved in such a way that it makes it easy, or at least easier, to target a broad array of completely different devices using just one type of content. So the only thing, if you look through the entire stack, if you look at APIs and CSS and markup, et cetera, the only thing that prevents us from running the exact same content on a web OS and in a web browser is trust, because in some cases you just won't trust arbitrary code that you get on the web. But that's it. The full rest of the stack can normally be made to run in the exact same way everywhere. So let's go slightly towards the actual concrete standards that we will be talking about. People speak a lot of HTML5, and to be honest, it's a rather confusing term. There is one thing that is the HTML5 specification. It's actually slightly more complex because there are several, but I won't get into that. But the narrow meaning is just the HTML specification. That includes markup, it's HTML, XHTML, it includes the parsing algorithm, it includes a few of the core APIs like window, for instance, so set timeout, a few things like that. But it doesn't include a lot of what people actually mean when they use the term HTML5. Some people try to change the acronym because they were not happy with the confusion. Bruce Lawson, for instance, suggested that we use new and exciting web technologies, NEWTs, but it didn't catch on. But so the version of the term that we're going to use here is the broader version, the one that includes not just the markup, but everything in CSS 2+3, SVG, MathML, and all sorts of specialized APIs that are being worked on and are currently shipping, plus all the media stuff, WebGL, video, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, the goal of this platform is to really be the platform. The point is that you shouldn't need anything else once we're finished. If we ever finish, which might take forever. But in order to obtain content and applications that are equal or superior in quality and fluidity to native, but are completely universal, can work on absolutely any device, and can degrade gracefully, and can really be reused in the same way that web content has been reused over the past years. So I assume that you're familiar with the basics of HTML, but the new things that HTML5 brings to the table are fairly broad. One thing that is really core in the HTML5 effort is genuine interoperability. In previous versions of HTML, it was sort of like, yeah, you have this element like that, and maybe you can parse it this way, but it wasn't very clear, which gave you all sorts of bugs in different browsers. Now the way that things are specified is really tied down and locked down and testable and strict, so that we can make sure that everyone implements it in the same way. This will save millions of hours of development for everyone. But in terms of positive features, there's now better markup, things like the section element or the article element that give you better structure, the nav element for navigation, things like that. There's better multimedia integration. Instead of the object going to a plugin, you get audio video, you get canvas for 2D and 3D graphics, etc. We now also have SVG integration. SVG has been around for over 10 years, and it took a while to catch on, but it is now being used more and more, often in ways that people don't notice, for very nice graphics visualization. And SVG has now been integrated completely into HTML, which means that you can embed it in HTML content, giving you really powerful 2D graphics that you can manipulate with the DOM, that you can click on, et cetera, et cetera. If you look at things like Raphael.js or D3 for visualization, you can see that there's a lot of power in that. Likewise, CSS had similar problems to HTML. It was defined in a fuzzy way, so it took a while before everyone could get roughly aligned on what it meant. But with CSS 2.1, that really got locked down, which opens the door for CSS 3 to add all sorts of crazy features. One thing that is going to be very valuable and that is starting to ship now is the new set of layout methods. Currently, when you want to do an application-like layout in CSS, it's fairly painful. You need to use counterintuitive things like floats and all sorts of hacks to position things. There are now new things being worked on, like grid layout, that will actually give you a proper traditional application layout facilities. There are also, of course, all sorts of decorations for shadows and rounded corners and gradients and et cetera, et cetera. And the CSS working group is upping the pace at which it is releasing these things to make sure that they become available quickly. CSS is also adding all sorts of more powerful features, so transformations, transitions, animations. These are extremely helpful in that they can help people build really powerful user interfaces in ways that are predictable, that have, for instance, animations that are predictable by the implementation. This is different from, for instance, sliding something in script is not predictable because you're doing it with code. If you slide it with CSS, it's predictable, which means you can sprite it and hardware accelerate it afterwards. And doing transitions in CSS really helps with that because it can give you really fluid UIs by being able to be hardware accelerated afterwards. And of course, there are now filters being added. We're even looking at adding shaders to CSS, which would allow for crazy things. But all of this is moving forward to become a really powerful styling platform. Yes? No, go ahead. They're going to be exactly the same. The CSS and SVG people got together and, you know, different syntax, same processing model, et cetera. So all the same. Then, as I was saying, lots and lots of APIs are being added, far more than we could possibly cover in this talk. But there are APIs for data storage, IndexedDB, web storage, things like that. There are APIs for networking. This includes bidirectional networking with WebSockets or the more usual XML HTTP requests for HTTP requests, which is now being extended to support sending files or receiving binary data, etc. Of course, there are always new DOM APIs that help manipulate the tree better, notably this DOM 4 being worked on, which again will improve interoperability. And then we're starting to get all sorts of user interaction, things like touch events or user feedback, like vibration, things like that. So APIs are really ripe area currently. There are dozens, literally dozens of them being developed in parallel. And so if you're interested, there are several groups working on them. And basically, they're moving quite fast overall. I mean, when you're inside, it's always frustrating. But from the outside, if you look at the pace at which new things are released, it's fairly fast. So speaking of APIs, let's look at what's coming soon in this area. These are things that are being worked on that have an impact or a specific relevance to the Tizen ecosystem. So in the web applications area, one thing that has been interesting for a while and is now coming to fruition is the ability to have a proper application manifest for any web applications that is standardized across the board. So currently, you have, for given platforms, you have manifest capabilities, but we don't have manifest capabilities for across the web for any browser or any operating system. And what this adds is simple things from saying who the author is to and you know what the icon of the application is to much broader. It opens the door to enhancing permissions, giving greater access to the application, etc. This is designed to tie in with application cache, so that essentially the application distribution model becomes you visit the website and it describes itself as being cacheable as a web application, and it can then be installed as an app. And the installation needs an API, and Web Applications is also working on this. There will be a way to just visit the website, and this will serve as the first step in an installation process that will make that website properly available and installed on your platform as an application that, for all intents and purposes, might be native. So this is a good first step in creating completely distributed app stores, discoverable content, having people create their own app stores and link them together, making it possible for a big player, a search engine or something like that, to create an app store on top of the entire web and make it possible progressively for people to start to monetize web applications that are on the web directly by tying in payment systems into the installation and management API. So this is really one of the big steps in moving forward towards turning the web into a complete application platform, making sure that people can actually make money with it is obviously a big part of that. On the device API side, we just released candidate recommendations for the battery and vibration APIs. Obviously, those are not the most sexy APIs, unless you want to start making bad taste jokes about the vibration API. But they're a good first step in exposing device functionality to the web, to web content, so that you can now change the way your application works depending on the battery level. You can write a game that uses vibration and things like that. We're also making good progress on at least contacts in the PIM APIs. So in order to expose contact information to a web page so that you could, I don't know, share game results or write an email to people and selecting the contacts from your own contacts database in a way that is obviously safe and that won't allow arbitrary websites to steal all your contacts. We're also working fairly well on camera access so that you can take pictures of video, capture sound and things like that from inside a web page or web application. These are becoming standards, as well as access the media gallery that may be local to your device or that might get content directly from your Flickr or Picasa, etc. Accounts. And we also have some proposals that are moving forward around sensors in order to access all sorts of sensor information, maybe temperature, maybe ambient light, proximity, etc. So these are moving forward nicely after a while. And we're also taking steps in order to make sure, as I was saying earlier, that we can get web operating systems that are interoperable with one another, which is going to be a problem. Obviously, everyone wants to avoid fragmentation in that space. So we're being preemptive there and creating a new working group, or at least proposing the creation of a new working group in W3C. If you want to look at the current proposed charter for that working group, you can visit that link. You can make pull requests to it. It's in my GitHub. This is currently just my proposal, but it's moving forward nicely. It's gaining momentum in the W3C consortium. This includes a lot of security sensitive things that you would not want to have in a browser. In a browser environment directly, but it more or less covers Tizen plus Boot2Gecko in terms of functionality with a few extra things. And so this hopefully can be the right place to bring Tizen participants and Mozilla and a number of other people interested in this together in order to define a real agreed upon standard platform. Now, as I was saying earlier, the big problem that we're facing is security. There's a lot of experience in designing APIs, experience from previous languages, experience from designing APIs for JavaScript already, etc. So, for instance, creating an API that exposes contacts information or calendar or things like that are not in themselves difficult. The part that is causing the most discussion is how to handle security properly. One of the reasons for that is because it would be nice if while we're creating new platforms, we didn't make the same mistakes that previous platforms have made and try to make them more secure for users in general. And another reason is also that web content is more susceptible to certain types of attacks. So, for instance, cross-site scripting is bad enough if you get injection of code into a website you're using. But if you get injection of code into an application that has access to system-level APIs, then that's a lot more dangerous. So there are ways in which we need to talk about mitigating that. And the first thing to note is that distrust is actually really good. Anytime you have a sandboxed context like a browser in which you can do entirely without trusting the code, then the user is much safer because you're completely insulating the code from doing anything eventually really dangerous to the system. And as much as possible, the idea is to make it so that the browser context can run 90-95% of all applications without being dangerous. And we're working on a variety of specifications to make it so that a lot of the functionality, most of the core functionality that one needs to write most types of applications will be available in a safe and sandboxed manner, as opposed to giving too much access to the platform. And one of the core technologies that we're using for that is WebIntents. If you haven't looked at WebIntents, I recommend you really do. It's not finalized right now, so it's not really usable. You can play with it in Chrome 20, I think. But it's going to become a core part of the way in which we do applications on the web. It's very similar to Android Intents. If you're familiar with those, you'll pick this up in no time. If you're not, I really highly recommend you visit webintents.org to see the examples, and also try to wrap your head around the way that WebIntents work. They essentially use mediated actions for anything. So for instance, if your application, just to take one example, if your application wants an image from a gallery, all it says is pick image / tar, and then this prompts the user based on the ways that the user has already installed of selecting an image. So for instance, if you have a Flickr account and you visited the Flickr website, then you will have the Flickr intent. Or if your browser knows about the local gallery, you will also have that. It will offer to select content from those two sources. But if you don't have a local gallery, but you have a Picasa account, the browser will know to offer content from the Picasa account automatically. So it matches services and clients on its own based simply on the intent of doing something. I want to pick an image, and you don't specify which service it comes from. Same thing, if you want a contact, I want to pick a contact. I want to select a contact, and it might be able to get it from your local address book, from somewhere remote, etc. I don't have time here for a full tutorial on intents, but I have to recommend that you really look into it. And finally, for cases that cannot be solved in a distrusted environment, it's really important that we understand what is most useful to developers or even to you as users in the trusted case. So currently, Tizen has an approach which works based on permissions and signatures, but it's not certain that it's the best approach or the ultimate approach or that it's the easiest thing. So there are many ways in which we can approach the gaining trust to run an application problem. One is certificates and signing packages. We could reuse maybe SSL. We could have trust providers from operators and things like that. Or we could have a traditional model in which when you install something and it's said to be trusted, you don't have any kind of security. It's trusted. It can do absolutely anything it wants. So this is really up to you to help us with your feedback. We're going to continue researching this, but it would be really important for us to know what you think is most valuable, what you think is the best approach here. And with this, I now give you Wonsuk Lee.
Okay, hello everyone. I'm Wonsuk Lee from Samsung. I'm in charge of the implementation of HTML5 features on Tizen browser in Samsung. So I think that some guys wondering because some agenda is changing, something like that, the people think about that. But as you know, the Robin version is really famous guys in the web domain, and then he's also key member of the W3C, so that's why we invite shortly him today. So I think that he gave a really good presentation for the HTML5 and the current status of the standard in general. And then I would like focusing on the what is the current status of HTML5 features on Tizen platform. Okay, so I would like to move to the second and third item because I think that Robin also covered the first item. So the what is the current status of the Tizen, the platform? How many HTML5 features already covered in the Tizen platform? I don't know how many guys know about the HTML5 test.com site, but it's if developer want to the check the which browser has how many features, how many HTML5 features support at this moment, then the people need to connect with the browser to this site, and then this site evaluate how many how many features are covered in your browser. So as you see, could you see that I think that the character is small, so just a moment. Yeah, this is the current status of the Tizen, the browser score. So as you look at this, in the mobile browser division, Tizen is the top position for the HTML5 score. So 408. So it's quite good score, I guess. And then which kind of HTML5 features is enabled in the Tizen in detail. So if you want to look at this, then you just connect this site, and then you can look at in detail things. So I think that I didn't have enough time to explain in detail for each by each items for the HTML5 features. So I just want to recommend just refer to this site. And then what is the HTML, advanced HTML5 features on the Tizen? There are some new specs like WebRTC, real-time communication, the features. It's really interesting feature because if you use this kind of API, you can make a web, the video conferencing web application on the browser platform. And then the features is consist of three major features like GAN user media and media stream and P2P as well. So what kind of application you can make with these features? Only GAN user media, you can make a very interesting application like face detection and face recognition and barcode recognition and even AR application. So there are some examples of the application which use the GAN user media. So the first, the right image show the 3D ping pong game. This is very interesting because the one side in the local and another side is remote, and then they can virtually play the ping pong. So in the local side, we just draw the board of the ping pong with the HTML5 canvas, and then they are needed to detect the ball, ping pong ball, right? And then that would be covered by the GAN user media features. Because GAN user media they provide to the API to get the access, the stream from the camera. And then web application analyze the image, the which is the ball, something like that. And then application can go to the logic of the game. And then the right feature show some funny web application. I think that kind of application is very the usual in the native application platform. But as you know, so far we didn't have the API for getting the video streaming from the camera, but that is could be covered by the GANUSU Media feature. And then GANUSU Media feature and record feature of the WebRTC, we can make a more application like Talking Tom. Do you know Talking Tom is very interesting application in the mobile? And also we can make a camcorder application based on the web technology. And then it could be a boring time because if I can say something continuously, so I just prepared some demo in my lab. So it's simple, but you can see how can work the WebRTC on the Tizen web platform. Okay, this is the reference target in my lab, and then you can look at the preview of the camera, and that is the web application. So, oh, sorry, it's a second. And then this demo showed how record API works. So this is done the record, and then in the right side, play the recorded video. So it's a web application, so it's interesting. And then this is some experimental the web application for the video conferencing. So when you look at the demo, the left side is the local and right side is remote the device. So we can make the video conferencing application based on the WebRTC stuff. Yeah. And then I would like to say the Tizen platform also provide file API features. In the W3C, there are three specs related with the file API, like the file reader API, file writer API, and directories and system API. So at this moment, Tizen supports all of that. And what kind of application you can make with the file API, you can take a look at the right top, the picture that I think that you already use some the Gmail application. In the Gmail application, you can drag and drop the files to attach some files to the email, right? So that kind of things is implemented by the file API, file reader API, and drag and drop API of HTML5. So you can make that kind of application using the file API. And then one more thing is that just the left and the bottom picture in that application from the Microsoft, and then using the file reader API, we can take the information of the metadata information from the video files. So as you know, in the JPEG, there are a lot of metadata files, including the geolocation information. So web application getting the geolocation information from the picture, and then we can call some kinds of web application in the cloud for the converse things, and then we can show up that kind of pictures is where is the place to record that picture, something like that. So we can make some more advanced application. And then the light stuff showed the image editor, but usually web application for the image editor usually save the files to the cloud, but if someone want to save the files to the local, then we need to the FireWrite API. Okay, and then there are advanced more features like device API. So Tizen browser support vibration API. It's important for the game. And then also we support battery status API. It's also important because sometimes, as you know, in case of the web-based email client, if the device has a higher battery, then okay, email client frequently check the server. But the battery is low, then the email client should check during a long-term duration, right? So that's intelligent web application. And then also we support the network info. It's really important for the adaptive streaming web application. And then I would like to say what is the next features in terms of HTML5 on the Tizen web platform. So we want to make a better compatibility with the HTML5 standard. So we will support the HTML5 track element. It's for supporting the subtitle, caption, and extra. And then also we want to support the microdata for the semantic annotation. And then we need to enhance the HTML5 forms for the enhancing the user experience on the web application. And then I think that you guys already heard about the ring mark. It's really important to the web because there are a lot of gaps between among the different browsers. Because as you know, there are a lot of HTML5 features, so it's really difficult to reduce the gap among the browsers. So I think that we need to the support. We need to make more compatibility with the ring mark. And then at this moment, ring mark test suit, in case of Tizen, the ring zero, the all of ring zero test suit had passed it. But for the ring one, we had 20 phase. So we will enhance this stuff. And we will also provide the web intent. And for other things, we will have a plan to support the HTML video capture, which is the one of the spec of W3C. And also, we want to support the screen orientation lock because this stuff is really important for the web game. Okay, that's all.
Thank you. Yeah.